Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I am so here. I am back from Oregon. Thanks to everybody that followed along on Instagram. I am a big sea lion fan now. I was previously kind of like generally happy to see sea lions. Now that I've seen them in their big cave raising their babies at this place called Sea Lion Caves on the Oregon coast, I am a profound sea lion fan. Bring me stories of sea lions. Find me on the Twitter bot. I am at Dear Dara. Also, it's so funny to spend your whole... I've never been to the Oregon coast before. It is so funny to spend your life as a food writer, and Dungeness crabs are, you know, they're $20 a pop. They're $30 a pound. They're all of these things. And then you're walking down the beach in the morning and they're just littered around and seagulls are eating them. They're free. The craziest thing. I could not get over it. I just, like, seeing two seagulls fight over a fresh Dungeness crab, I had no idea. They just look like two people at a table battling for the last little bits of it. Ugh, so much fun. But I am back in the swing of things. We have a very special show for you today. We got nothing but young chefs up and coming in restaurants. We're going to talk about what that's like. We're going to talk about how to make your way in this crazy new mixed up world. We're going to talk about all the things. So if you got any questions for some young chefs at some restaurants that are very, very good, tweet me. I am at Dear Dara, or you can always text us 81807. My first guest is the esteemed Dustin Thompson, chef de cuisine of St. Genevieve, which, you know, if you listen to me talking with Chad, one of my favorite places. It's down by Lake Harriet, kind of 50th and Bryant, and it's got this French vibe that I just love. You walk in, kind of feel like you're in Paris. The place has got a reputation as one of the toughest tables in the Twin Cities. But they are not like that right now. You can really get in there, and that's why Dustin is here, to kind of spread the word that, yes, you can walk into St. Genevieve. You can get a table. It's happening. And I am very curious about how you walk into an established restaurant like St. G with a kind of famous chef like Stephen Brown and make your own name. So I am very happy that Dustin Thompson is here. Chef, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you.
All right, so all the questions. First of all, you're from here, right?
Yeah, I was born in Apple Valley.
Apple Valley. Did you have a lot of apples?
No apples in Apple Valley.
too bad. And then so tell me, how did you know, rise up this path of cooking? What was your first restaurant job?
The Minnesota Valley Country Club in Bloomington.
Oh, very nice.
It was exciting.
Yeah, do you know how to make those? Do you patterns on mushrooms? Can you tourne a mushroom?
Yeah, I weirdly like remembered the whole menu there, and it was huge. It's a country club, so there was like 100 things.
I love country clubs. I love just the so much staff always behind the scenes, mm-hmm. making everything happen. You get a lot of camaraderie because it's like you just deal with these waves of giant events that are always coming upon you.
Like, yep.
Like a little Dungeness crab scuttling. Okay, so you grew up in Apple Valley, and did you go to cooking school? Is that the path
I did
you took?
For a short amount of time, about 6 months, and then I met a girl, and that was it for that.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And she was like, I hate food.
No, I just got distracted.
Oh, okay. All right, and so then tell me about the path. How'd you end up at St. G?
I started working for Steven at Tilia way back when Tilia was still a little baby restaurant.
But always very popular. I think for the second it opened the doors, you couldn't get in there. The Tilia Kitchen, if anyone's ever been, that's a place in Linden Hills that I love. They're having a big block party tomorrow. I will drop by that for sure, because they're just a couple doors down from the best children's bookstore in the nation, which, of course, is Wild Rumpus. If someone has little kids and has never been to Wild Rumpus, you got to drop everything and go. It's an astonishing place. Go in through this little door, and then there's books everywhere, and they have animals. They have, like, a chicken that walks around and different animals in cages and, like, a little place under the floor where you can see bats that are in a cage. It's the greatest place. I love it so much. One of my favorite things of the Twin Cities. And Tilly is a few doors down, and they have these great little busy boxes for kids. And so one of our rituals when my kids were tiny was to always go to Chicken Bookstore, as we call it, not Wild Rumpus. We just call it Chicken Bookstore because there's a chicken. And then go and get brunch or lunch at Tilia and get the busy box. So much fun. But from a cooking side, the Tilia kitchen is the size of a matchbox.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how is that? You have to learn a lot. You have to be very chill.
Yeah, you had to be very conscious of where everyone else was around you. There was not a whole lot of room to move back and forth.
I've only seen, when I was in Oregon, went on the tour in Portland of a 1959 Navy submarine. That's the only kitchen I've seen smaller. And maybe the Cafe Barbette kitchen, which is also legendarily the size of a closet. Okay, so you started at Tilia. How did you end up there? You must have known something about it.
Yeah, there was a friend of Steven's working for him at the time that I had worked with previously at the French Meadow, and he gave me a call and told me to call Steven Brown. And I was very young, and that was very intimidating.
Oh, really? Yeah. But you did it anyway.
Yep.
How'd you find the courage?
Kind of the same way I came here, just ended up.
Oh, you mean to this actual radio show?
Yes.
Yeah, Steven Brown threw Mr. Dustin Thompson into the fire. Was like, you're going to have media training on the air. So that's happening right now. All right, so you started there. And then how did you rise up to take over St. Genevieve?
Kind of a long road of moving away. My wife and I moved to Bayfield for about a year after we got married, and then ended up back in Minneapolis, opened a few small restaurants, like the Harriet Brasserie was my first chef job right next to Tilia. And then previous to St. Genevieve, I was at the Brewer's Table with Jorge Guzman.
Oh, that's right. So is that pretty typical for a young chef these days? You're kind of hopping around
Yes.
every year, 6 months. All right. So what is the – if someone is listening to this, they're like, I want to know how chefs do that kind of thing – What is the standard advice you tell people to do? Things like go work for a butcher, go work for a fishmonger, learn those stations, or do you tell them, what do you tell them?
It's really just about committing and working really hard. I think you can be working in any kitchen and learn a lot. You teach yourself more than you realize by just kind of focusing on the work and deciding if that's really something that you want to do, because it's a big commitment.
Yeah, kitchen days are long days.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so then you took over St. Genevieve, and I'm very curious about that as a chef, to kind of walk into a French kitchen in the year 2018, an American French kitchen. You know, a French kitchen 30 years ago meant one thing. You're going to be cooking sole meunière and duck l'orange and those kind of classic dishes, but that's not what anybody wants today, but they do want something French. How do you kind of walk that line?
We try to take inspiration from the more like trendy, newer restaurants in Paris. So it's kind of French in quotations. It's kind of how I like to describe it, because if you go to Paris right now, not everyone is cooking duck à l'orange or sole meunière.
No, nor were they 30 years ago.
Exactly.
So.
I think it's our perception here in the Midwest still that that's French food. But really, we're just trying to cook as if we were in Paris, so focusing on seasons and trying to stay ahead of trends, but also just tasty food.
Do you feel constrained, or do you feel happy that you don't have to think about all the ingredients in, say, Ethiopia, Thailand, Micronesia? Do you want to be playing in those playgrounds, or are you happy to have kind of rules around you?
For me, it's easier if there's rules and guidelines somewhere to start. Starting with a blank page is impossible for me.
Yeah, I think I don't know how kitchens that have those, 10,000 ingredients even find them. I don't know how you keep things fresh. I don't know how you keep it on the shelves. I don't know how you logistically look for I'm just bad at looking for something in 10,000 things, but I think it would be just too much.
If my order guide gets past 3 pages, it means we have to pare it in a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So you're running St. Genevieve. You came to my attention. I dropped in for a hot happy hour a few weeks ago. You're running quite an amazing cheeseburger, which is French. If you go to actual France, they're eating them. But the $6 cheeseburger you do during happy hour was like wonderful. How'd you come up with that guy?
We had a burger on when I started working there that was big and covered in bordelaise and brie cheese, and it was delicious, but it was very heavy. And personally, I'm very happy that the gourmet chef burger trend is kind of going by the wayside, because I like simple burgers, and that's kind of what we wanted to make. So it's only a 4-ounce patty, so it's enough that you can just snack on one real quick. And we have a great bread baker, so we bake these great hamburger buns. And really, it's all about the bun for me. So,
I know. That's one of those things that until you've lived a life where you've had a fresh baked bun, you mean, buns are fine. They're not, you know, like they're just like something that are just around. They're like gravel. They're just like part of the world, like buns. I don't care that much. And then you have one that's just been made, like a real bun. And you're like, oh, my gosh, I know why the culture orients around these. These are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So that's good. All right. So tell us, tomorrow you got the big Tilia block party coming up.
Yes.
You're doing something else. You're going to be...
I'll be just down the street at the farmer's market. A little friendly cooking competition in honor of Julia Child's birthday.
Love Julia. Are you going to drop a chicken on the floor?
Yes.
Yes, you are. Really?
No.
You have like a rubber chicken that everybody ceremonially passes around and drops? No.
Maybe now.
Maybe not. All right. So you're going to be doing that. Then there's going to be the big Tilia block party.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get back to your life cooking French food at St. Genevieve. And then the big message you want people to know is that they can come in.
Yes, we are busy, but we always have tables. We always have room for walk-ins. There's always reservations available. We're excited to see anyone that wants to come in.
Yeah, because it's a thing. I think if you get that reputation, they're like, you can't get in there. Then everybody's in a panic and they just don't go at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's not good for you guys. So.
Well, and also I don't think of us as a special occasion restaurant. I think we're an everyday place. Just a neighborhood restaurant on the corner.
I think of you as a special occasion because that's when I go. And I'm almost like, I get to go somewhere just for me. I get to go somewhere that's not on deadline. I'm going to go to St. Genevieve. Just one of my favorite places. Okay. Well, Dustin Thompson, thank you so much for coming
thank
in
you.
Today. All right. When we come back, let's think about what we're going to do. Should we talk to the chef? Let's talk to the next group of chefs. That'll be fun times. And I will have them when we come back. We are back here on WCCO Off the Menu. You know, we're heading into 5 years on this show. I feel so proud and happy. Does anybody early listener remember how nervous I was that first week? Oh, my goodness. We were live, and we were live at this event. It was my very first show. I almost just crashed to the ground in a panic attack. It was just bonkers. And now here I am. I'm eating ice cream on the air, getting nice messages from people. I will get to some of those in the next segment. The text line is up and working. You got any questions for me on anything at all? 81807. I will answer those. And yes, I know that the state fair is coming on Thursday. I am getting my act together. Got my map kind of planned. I got all secrets. You want to know more about that? You text in 81807. I'm not just spilling my secrets because I'm babbling. I'm going to spill my secrets because somebody cares or asks. That's my plan. Okay, here's what we're doing. I've got Kristen Poppenhagen. I've got Kristen Poppenhagen and John Krademacher from New Sweet Chow. They opened an ice cream parlor last week. I dropped by. It was amazing. I was like, you got to come in and tell the people about this. Now they're here. That's how it rolls, man. All right. So I am so happy you're here. Kristen and John. So, John, you have a cooking trajectory that was kind of, as far as I know, Sea Change to Fika to Sweet Chow. You guys met on the line at Sea Change under superstar Jamie Malone, who's going to be on the show in September, if I can persuade her to step away from being a cover star on magazines and stuff. And Kristen Poppenhagen, you were a pastry chef at Sea Change, kind of famous for their pastries. And now you are, and now you're at Sweet Chow with your first ever like full ice cream parlor. This is cool stuff. So I want to ask you guys some questions, but first of all, congratulations on ice cream. Is this a thing to get going, get off the ground?
Thank you. Yeah. Well, we've been working on the development of the flavors for what, maybe like a month.
About a month. So we've been working hard on getting those refined. And when we opened Sweet Chow, we always knew we wanted the sweet aspect of it to be an ice cream shop. And I was super excited to hear Kirsten might be interested. So I reached out to her and she's been doing an awesome job making our own base, developing flavors that match our food. So we're really excited about what's going on.
So when you opened Sweet Chow, I thought that the sweet just had some like Jeff Spicoli surfer dude like Sweet Chow. I thought that's what it was about, but it wasn't that at all. You had a secret in your pocket for ice cream. All right, but tell me why Southeast Asian? That was kind of a surprise. You, John, why did you want to do that kind of cuisine, Thai food, Vietnamese food in a modern idiom downtown?
So all of our owners spend a ton of time in that part of the world, and it's food that they really love, and it's food I really love too. As a chef, it's like when I had a day off, that's what I'm going to go eat is Thai food or Vietnamese or stuff like that. So the concept just kind of came together. I got to spend some time over there with one of the owners and really see what the food was like there, and actually it's really great because here in Minneapolis and St. Paul, we have an awesome, you know, food scene for that kind of flavor. So it was great to go to Vietnam and, oh, I do know what that is because I've had it on university in St. Paul. So, and then the ice cream store was just another, we felt that the neighborhood really could benefit for something like that. And our flavor profiles could lend themselves to some great, interesting flavors as well as have some classics as well.
All right. And then Kristen, how did you end up being a pastry chef? Tell me about your life.
Yeah. You know, it was kind of a slow development. I started out on the line at Sea Change, and then slowly started into the pastry.
So, how did you end up on the line at Sea Change? You're from here, right?
I went to school here, and then I was working at Sea Change and school at the same time.
How did someone turn into a pastry chef? Were you like, if I popped into your kitchen when you were 8 years old, would you have been just sitting around making brownies?
I was actually, yeah. I spent a lot of time in my childhood. My grandma making cookies with her, and she makes amazing apple crisp. You know, I just kind of grew up with all of that, and I think that has really played into my adult life, and I do try to keep a connection in my stuff to my roots. And
all right, shout out to grandmas who make apple crisp with their grandkids. It's a good route. So was it like a special apple crisp? Was it a Minnesota one, a German one? Was it a...
Oh, yeah, it is the best. I'm not sure. She starts with oats and she peels the apples herself. And yeah,
that's
my grandma
best.
Is the best. Yeah, she really has been an inspiration to me.
So. See, people think like, oh, you're just making pastries with your kid. Little do you know, you're preparing them for an important career. So you were always baking, and then you went to cooking school, right? That was the road you took?
Yeah, I did. Well, I started, yep, and then I was working at Sea Change at the same time too, and really found myself there and found a good community of people.
And so what do you tell young people today? Because that's a lot of people say, you know, go to cooking school. It kind of gets you the basics. And then a lot of people say, don't go to cooking school. It gets you the debt. There's too much involved. What do you tell people?
I think it's a personal choice. For me, it helped with a little bit of confidence in the kitchen side of things. I mean, but it really is a personal thing. You can just start at the bottom if you want and work your way up and just work hard.
And what do you, John, what's your take on that? Cooking school, yay or nay?
I think it's a personal decision. I went to culinary school. I think you get a lot more working in a kitchen, but I also made a lot of contacts. So like I got my first jobs through school. So that I did benefit from it.
So were those the famous externships? So the school places you in a kitchen to get some real experience?
Even before that, just, I'm a second career, so I worked for a large bank for many, many years.
Wait, what?
Yeah, so I got out of that and decided to go to culinary school. I'd worked in restaurants my entire life. It wasn't through externship, but it was through meeting people at the school. It's like I struggled to find a job because I hadn't cooked in a professional kitchen like in the Twin Cities ever. So it was really helpful for me to go to class and meet people, meet the chefs there, and they got me connected with people who were looking for help, and it really did benefit me, the people I met right away.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast on a totally different thing about segregation and education. They were talking about how what a huge part of education, that kind of social capital piece is, where you meet people that know people. And I hadn't really ever heard it phrased in that exact way, that kind of social capital. How do you get into those top restaurants? And that's a way of doing it. I was talking a lot about WCR over the winter, that Women Chefs and Restaurateurs group, and that's what they're offering, too, is that kind of way to make those connections. That social capital, those connections, they are invaluable. I think we'll take a few minutes here for a commercial break, and then we'll be back, and we'll talk some more about the specific kind of horizons of ice cream, which I'm very interested in. Dara here. I am in the studio with Kristen Poppenhagen and John Krottenmacher from Sweet Chow. They just opened an ice cream place. So let's talk about the whole ice cream thing, because I am interested. There's been so much interest in the Twin Cities and ice cream this summer. I wrote a piece in the beginning of the summer for a wonderful Minneapolis St. Paul magazine, our summer bucket list, because there was so much going on. World Street Kitchen has their thing, which is called Milk Jam, kind of these interesting international flavors and then kind of saucy, wacky flavors. Then there's this whole rolled ice cream explosion. There's a kind of an artisanal ice cream from the farm thing going on at Pump House in South Minneapolis. Like, I feel like ice cream was just leading its life, and all of a sudden, 2018, it was like, kapow, everyone cares. Now, you guys have come in with the very first kind of pastry chef-driven ice cream. Interesting. One of the things I like, though, you do, you don't get ice cream base. Now, for people that don't know what ice cream base, Kristen, what is ice cream base?
Right. So a lot of places, they'll buy what they call base. It's just pre-manufactured and you would order it in. So that is like the mixture of cream and milk and stuff.
So it comes in as a liquid. And what you do if you order base is you freeze it. But then a lot of times it also has different emulsifiers or things to make it so that it doesn't get crystals. That's one of the things hard to do in ice cream, is to not get those crystals. And you wouldn't think, because we live in a world where no ice cream has crystals anymore, but it's actually because people have pre-engineered it, so that's not happening. But the base can make all ice cream taste the same. And you decided to go a different route. You're making yours from scratch, like Ben Franklin chef would have made his ice cream, right? So what is that? What goes into it?
Right, yeah. So rather than buying in our base, we are making everything totally from scratch in-house, which is really quite rare to find a place that will do that. We're starting just from basic ingredients, cream, sugar, eggs, and we make everything in-house. All of our flavorings are like fresh strawberries we put in our strawberry ice cream, and we steep the tea into the handmade base to make the Thai tea ice cream. And
so that's really fun. I saw your very expensive tiny machine, right? Or it's a big machine that makes a tiny batch. It makes 10 gallons at a time, and so you can, you know, just do that. I tried a bunch of your different flavors. You've got a very intense Vietnamese coffee, which I like. It's almost too intense to have by itself. You kind of want to put it with things, but that's what pastry chefs do, right? You can be like, oh, we'll put this in a sparkling float, or we'll pair it with this fancy other thing. And then you make this just a vanilla, which is just like perfect. The vanilla is so good. It's got that, if anyone's ever had a creme anglaise, it's just got that very custardy, almost yellow tint to it. And it tastes so, it's nothing to do with Southeast Asia, just all about England. That's where that comes from. That's that just straight up custard frozen. So good. And then you tell me where you are on wacky flavors, because if you're on the internet too much, as I am, you see nothing but wacky flavors. Last week, everyone was losing their minds over a mayonnaise-flavored ice cream. What do you think?
Right, I saw that. I think we definitely would be interested in trying some wacky flavors. They're really fun right now, and I think people kind of want to go beyond their horizons. So, yeah, maybe you can watch out for some fun flavors right now.
Oh, so you're pro wacky flavors.
I am.
All right. Well, that's, I think some challenges are going to come along. There's a lot of Minnesota cuisine which has not been rendered into dessert form. I have seen some sweet corn ice cream, but I feel that there's where more could you go with the sweet corn? You could do a sweet corn watermelon, or you could do a you tell me, what's a good sweet Minnesota sweet corn thing?
Right. I mean, we could do that. Also, we kind of want to have some flavors that play off of the chow side of the restaurant, because we are the sweet at the ice cream. And then so we kind of want to bring in some of the, you know, Southeast Asian flavors.
So papaya salad ice cream is the direction you're going? No, that would be terrible. All right, we've only got a few more minutes. We've got a couple of questions that are coming in. Is it difficult to how did you teach yourself to cook in that Southeast Asian palette of flavors, John?
Well, it's food I really love to eat. So, and I read a ton, and I dine a ton. You know, chefs that don't really have lives, I go out to dinner and I read cookbooks and work a lot. So, it's just food I really loved. So, it was really fun for me to like dig into those flavors and figure out what makes things what. Because like everything we do is built in tradition. We don't, you know, it's like some people want to call fusion food, but when I make larb, it's what it is. There's just a few different techniques I like to sprinkle in there that I've learned throughout my career. So I think that's part of what makes us fun right now.
And how is it cooking, you know, these other cultures' food when you obviously didn't grow up in Thailand? You didn't grow up in a Vietnamese family. Is it feel, I mean, how are you culturally respectful of that universe kind of coming from that?
I try to stay true to the tradition. So it's like, if I know a recipe is going to have, I never want to copy something, but if I know, you know, like my papaya salad base, it's all based on a very traditional thing, and I just season it how I like it. So I don't ever want to, I don't know. I love the tradition, so I just like try to respect it. And yeah, mine's going to be a little bit different, but everyone's is a little bit different. You know, every grandma's, even potato salad in Minnesota, is going to be a little bit different from every other grandma. So I just want to make it good, and hopefully people understand how much I love this food and enjoy it.
And all the potato salads will come in Kemp's buckets on your arm, right? When you're going someplace, that's one of my favorite. All right. Well, anybody who wants to check out what Sweet Chow is up to, they're in the Warehouse District. I had a story about the ice cream at mspmag.com, and you can see that. It's also up on my Facebook page, Dara.Grumdahl. But Sweet Chow, really fun pastry chef ice cream. You can get Christine, you make yours, and to get you a sundae. She'll do all the, like, the toasted things and a fresh waffle cone and make it all fancy, and that is a good way to spend your weekend. You guys, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
All right. When we come back, I'm going to answer some of your questions. 81807, text them. Find me on the Twitter bot. I am at Dear Dara. And I will answer any and all questions you got, including on the upcoming State Fair Madness. Dara here. All right. This is the recipes didn't make it up on the website this week, so nobody wants to cook this week, so we're just going to have a meaty ask me anything, a couple of them. First off, I want to remind you, put on your calendar the weekend of September 15th. That's when I will be in River Falls, Wisconsin. We will be broadcasting the show live. We will be at Bacon Fest. If you've never been to River Falls, it's the cutest town. It's right over the river, not far from the Twin Cities Metro at all. And yes, there is bacon, a lot of bacon to eat. It's going to be a fun time. I'm going to be there. A lot of the WCCO crew is going to be out there. We're going to be having fun. So come. I want to see you on the morning of the 15th in Wisconsin. Start calling your friends. Tell them you're going to go, because we're going to have a good time. All right, so what else is going on? I got a question about my favorite restaurant in Maple Grove, Champlin, that is not Q Fanatic. Oh, very, very tricky there. You knew what I was going to say, because I do love me some Q Fanatic. That is a good barbecue. Let's see. I What is the name of that little place in the mall there that's, rats, I can't think of it. I'm going to have to Google that one. There's a funny little Julia Jelly Beans. That's it. That's what it is. That place is really good. And there's a Mavericks, like wood fire steak kind of place. I like that very much. Jelly Bean and Julia's, that's the name of it. So this place is another little barbecue place with a great burger situation. I think it's actually in Anoka, but very close to Champlin. So try that. Jelly Bean and Julia's. I'm looking at their menu right now. Jellybeanandjulias.com. Just a homey, lovely, charming place. The fact that this place hasn't been on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives lately is a travesty. It will eventually make it there, I guarantee you. Great biscuits and gravy kind of stuff. But then also that Mavericks, I like a wood-fired steak. I think that that is a very, very good way to do that. So I like that Mavericks wood fire up there. Those are my two favorites. Got a question. Avocado pits, how do you get them to sprout? That is a great question. Some of them will sprout and some of them just won't. They are avocados live a complicated life after they come out of the fields, and sometimes they're too old, or they're from hybrid plants where they're not really going to sprout. But if you do get one that's going to sprout, it will typically start sprouting in the seed. I mean, in the avocado when you see it. You can kind of rig up a little thing so that part of it is in the water. You know, it's egg-shaped. You want the part of it that's a little more down to be in some water. You can do that with a vase that's kind of narrower at the top if you have one of those. Or you can make a little armature out of pipe cleaners, and that might get it to do. But if you get one and it doesn't sprout, it very well may not be anything you're doing. It just might be that not all avocados are going to sprout. But that's a fun thing to do. And then what are you going to do once it gets big? You can maybe grow it inside. Maybe you'll be on a trip where you have to take your big avocado on a road trip and you'll drive down to Mexico to return it to its native habitat because you won't be able to live with it inside your house anymore. I don't know. You're on an adventure once you get that thing to sprout. I have more wisdom such as this when we come back. All right, we're back into the fun times, the Ask Me Anything segment. You got anything, you can send it to me, 81807. All right, I got another question. Someone saw my magazine article on a recent flight, and I did a great job. Well, thank you. Yes, I write for Delta Sky. That's part of my day job. When I'm not here at Minneapolis, St. Paul, I had a fun story on the future of podcasting and audio. You know, you can always pick this thing. We have a off the menu is on Stitcher. You can find it anytime you miss a week. You're like, I missed Dara. How did I not hear this wisdom? And you just go on Stitcher. You subscribe to Off the Menu. Three of you wonderful people have left positive reviews, which warmed the cockles of my heart. More you can anytime. All right. So I got a question from a chef who doesn't want to be named, who's wondering, he's been busy and he hasn't gotten to any of the restaurants, the new hotnesses lately. Where should he go? So if you're a chef, you go to Grand Cafe. See what Jamie Malone is up to. We mentioned her earlier in the show. She was on the cover of Food & Wine magazine a couple weeks ago for good reason. The stuff that she's doing, just kind of French, homey food at Grand Cafe, it is just staggering, amazing stuff. The 38th Street Bridge just reopened, too, so you can get to Grand Cafe, which is on 38th and Grand. It's hard to be a foodie Minnesotan in construction season. All right, so Grand Cafe. And then the other one I would say is that Northeast restaurant, Hi Hi. It's a Vietnamese place by Chef Christina Nguyen. She is really an up-and-comer. Those are the two places of a you want some foodie bragging rights, you go to those two things. I also, you know, love a lot of other restaurants, but your chef, you need to catch up on your homework. Those are the two. Grand Cafe, Hi Hi. All right, I got another question. How do I prepare for the state fair? I do so much preparing. You don't have time. I already have, I kind of map out all the new foods. I make a flurry of phone calls to people I've dealt with prior years, seeing if they have any new foods that are not out there yet. I spend the day before making sure I'm like hydrated and everything so I can get there at 6 a.m. on Thursday. That's where I will be. And I will be live tweeting that I will be writing up my top five new foods. I will get through everything by noon. I got it planned out. We will have them up on MSPMag.com by 1, I promise. I will be on Chad at 2 for the whole hour, and Chad and I are going to taste the new foods. We'll talk about the new foods. I will be punchy. You're like, how can you plan that you'll be punchy? I've planned it. That's the professional way. I know how this goes. I've done this a bunch of years running. I am really looking forward to it. Weirdly, I am really looking forward to the fact that there's fewer new foods this year than last year, because this will allow me to really spend more time considering the meaning of each and every key lime pie beer and and messy Giuseppe construction. So come on down to WCCO Fair booth on Thursday. You will see all of us, and we are going to be having the most fun. And I want to see you there. And I'll see you there this week, State Fair.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.